Hey listeners, quick question. Are you tired of overpaying for your mobile plan? I've got the answer. Ting Mobile. Ting Mobile is all about flexibility and savings. You only pay for what you use, no crazy fees or overages. It's perfect for those who want control over their phone bill without sacrificing quality. Say goodbye to bloated phone bills. Go to milwaukeemafia.com/ting. Ting Mobile. Mobile that makes sense.
You're listening to Milwaukee Mafia, your podcast dose of Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Milwaukee Mafia podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm Gavin.
And Gavin, sounds like we got some like real-time news for this podcast, which doesn't happen very often.
Does not happen often. We have some real-time news. As of today for us... this is news that came out yesterday. As of news for the people who will hear this when it comes out,
it'll be about a week late.
It'll be about a week late. But if you didn't hear it anywhere else, you'll hear it here. And that is that John Balistrieri passed away over the weekend, over this last weekend, for those listening in the future. It sounds like he had a bad fall. And didn't immediately pass, but it took him about the next day. He was 75, so
that's pretty. Young.
Yeah, it is pretty young. I don't know if 75 is young or old. It's in that spot.
I would think at this point
these
in time,
days it's probably still young.
Yeah, when you think about dying at 75, you're dying sort of young. I mean, it's not unreasonable, but it's not old.
Yeah, and so. It was kind of unexpected. Obviously, a fall is always unexpected, but he had been in not great health for a while, but then he was losing weight, he was getting better, and then he had a fall. Kind of wanted to just talk briefly about that. Now, I'm not going to say anything bad about John. I'll just be very clear about that up front. So if you're listening in and you want to hear the hot gossip, you're not going to hear it, especially not right now. That's incredibly rude, and I'm not going to do that.
Now, just to set everybody up, I would hope everybody would assume that they realized John Balistrieri was Frank Balistrieri's son.
Yes.
But he was also, was he the lawyer son?
They were both lawyer sons, yes.
But was he the one that worked closely with Frank?
Well, they both kind of did.
Okay. Is the other son dead?
Yes.
Okay. So this is the last of, kind of the Balistrieri line.
Yes.
Is that over now?
Yes.
I'm sure that John and whatever the other son had kids, but.
I will explain that.
Okay.
So yeah, like I said, I'm not going to say anything. When we get farther on the timeline on the regular, this is the regular podcast, but back to a regular normal episode, we'll get to a point where we'll hear the stories and they're not all flattering. Mm-hmm. So we'll get that. But today is not the day. We're not going to do that. I actually kind of wanted to just sort of personally talk about John a little bit. Not that I knew him well, because I certainly didn't. I don't want to give that impression. But I met him about 2015, so almost 10 years ago. And it happened the way that you think that it would happen because of the stuff that I write about. Mm-hmm. And John actually reached out. He had reached out to my publisher at the time, and the publisher reached out to me. And said, here's his phone number. He'd like to talk to you. So I called him up and he wanted to meet at the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee. Very nice hotel. We met there and had coffee. I had regular coffee. He had espresso. Very, 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 very classy guy.
A very, very important detail. Thank you for including that, Gavin.
Well, I just wanted... So this is the thing. This is my first meeting with John was this time. I had very briefly talked to him on the phone prior to that, but I'd never met him in person before. And, and I, at that point, didn't entirely know what he looked like because most of the photos that I had seen of him were like 20 years old. Mm-hmm. But there was no mistaking who he was. Like, entered the room, had the full suit on, fanciest guy in the room.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah. Like, the Pfister's nice hotel, but you knew when he walked in the room. Very, very sharp dresser. Came in, sat down, ordered coffee. He got espresso. And I say that, like, not to be like, oh, I don't – my memory is not that great. Like, don't be mistaken here. But it stands out to me because at this point, we're just meeting for the first time. So we're kind of, like, sizing each other up. Mm-hmm. And what he thinks of me, I don't know. But I'm looking at him and, like, 90% of what I know about him is the newspaper stuff, which is not flattering.
Yeah.
And so he comes in. He's got the suit. He orders the espresso. And it jumps out at me because, like, this is very, like, old school Italian. this is what you do. You drink your coffee out of your little cup, you know? And I'm like, okay. I'm like, guy definitely is going with the image, you know? As much as he tries to distance himself from it, he's still got and a lot of that, I mean, is just being Italian. Like, that's mm-hmm. what you do. But he definitely does not try to shy away from that. And it was an interesting meeting. He wasn't super thrilled with me at first because of what the stuff I'd been writing about, but he wasn't mad about it either. He was like, you know, someone's going to write about this. And he goes, I'm not mad at you about it because you're like approaching it in an honest way. You're not out there blasting people.
And glamorizing
right.
anything or, you know, overplaying anything.
Yeah. And then, like, after we had talked for a while, and even, like, his demeanor in that, I don't even know how long it was, half hour, 45 minutes, his demeanor changed. Because at first you could tell that he was uncomfortable and a little agitated because he doesn't like people writing about his family. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the meeting, he was much more relaxed, much more friendly. And he, at that point, informed me that he had been working on his autobiography and was hoping that I could help him revise and edit it. Now, people who know me, like, know this. Like, I've told people that. But I wasn't supposed to really say it because I had, like, a non-disclosure agreement after the fact. That is now void. Mm-hmm. I can now say whatever I want. And that was huge. That was obviously, I said yes. And when I left the Pfister that day, like, I was pumped mm-hmm. because I entered this meeting thinking I was going to get chewed out, you know? Like, I wasn't, like, scared where I thought, like, he was going to kick my ass, but I thought I was going to get chewed out.
Okay.
And I leave the meeting with him being like, I respect you, and we're going to work on this project. And that was huge. That was absolutely amazing to me. And so for the next, I don't even know how long. I mean, this is 10 years now. So 6 months or more, we would meet periodically, always by him. We would go down and I'd go to the Shorecrest Hotel. And although his family hasn't owned the Shorecrest in a long time, he has some kind of an arrangement with the current owner where he could maintain his apartment and an office. So we would meet at his office. And his office, you could get either in through the lobby or there was an exterior door. So I'd go in through the exterior door. And it was really cool because he'd come out and he'd show me there's like sewer, not even sewer, there's grates mm-hmm. in the parking lot. And he showed me where, like, the FBI had pulled up the grates and, like, crawled in under the building to plant microphones under the under the floorboards.
So now, was this just to bug him, or was this at one point?
It was
point
not
time?
To. It was not to bug him. It was to bug his father.
Okay, so like this was his father's office at one point in time, or something like that.
I don't know offhand exactly how this. So on the ground floor of the Shorecrest is also a restaurant, and I don't know what the restaurant's called today, but the restaurant at the time, like in the 70s, 80s, was called Snugs, and his father would hang out there.
So they were bugging that restaurant?
So they bugged under the restaurant. They had, apparently, they had a bug at a table at the restaurant for a while, but they also bugged under the office. And I don't know that the office was used by his father or was used by him at that point, but they weren't specifically trying to pick up him. They were trying to pick up his father.
Obviously.
Yeah. And so he showed me like where they did that, and that was kind of neat. And yeah, and we'd meet, and I brought my little MP3 recorder and just record hours of conversation. And he was pretty open. He was very, very open. There were some things where he would not talk about them, and there were some things where he would say, "I don't know." And I'm pretty sure that "I don't know" was not the full honest answer. And like, I don't say that like I'm mad at him about it, because I'm not, you know. Dude's putting himself out there, which is huge. I'm not gonna really like get mad at him about the fact that like some things he doesn't necessarily want.
Yeah,
it was frustrating at times because he'd have now this I can say, I'm trying not to say too much on the details, but this I can say because he actually posted a YouTube video, and you can look this up. It's like he talks about, I think the YouTube video is called like Mob and the Teamsters or something. It's just like a 2-minute video. Mm-hmm. But he'll say things like, "My father had a lot of influence with local Teamsters. I don't know why, but he did. And he was able to secure these loans." And like, that was like frustrating to me, because I'm like, I think you know why. I think you know why. And he would really, really be hesitant about going that extra step, and he would like play down a lot of things. And I get it. I get where he's coming from. He had been under scrutiny from law enforcement for a long time. He spent several years in prison for something that he says he's not responsible for, that is kind of like his dad put on him. I get where he's coming from. You know, he's very defensive, as he should be, about a lot of it. But it's also kind of frustrating because, like, his dad had passed. It's not like it's a big secret. I don't think that him saying he doesn't know is completely honest.
You're absolutely right. But there could be a very personal reason why he doesn't want to let that out of the hat, you know?
But it's weird to even bring it up then.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, to say, like, he had this influence over people, but I don't know why. Like, well, then why even bring it up? Like, you know why. So that's weird, but the meetings were great, super nice, talked about just about everything, had some good personal conversations as well. I will say that I never met his son. I have never met his son, but he was so ridiculously proud of his son.
Okay.
Like,
that's cool.
Yeah, just absolutely, like, he couldn't hold back with how proud he was of his son and how successful he had been. And even his son's friends. Like,
really?
Like, this guy must have been, like, just the greatest dad. Or at least that's how he came across to me. Because he would talk about, like, his son's friends would come over and he would kind of tease the friends. But he would be encouraging about them. And it just sounded like he was really kind of fun to be around. But yeah, totally gave me open access. He had 42 banker boxes of like court documents going back almost 40 years. He let me take them. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have them now. I had to bring them back. But he let me bring them back to my house. I took them to the coffee shop. I read them. I could scan things if I wanted to. He was totally open about it. showed me all kinds of photos. His office is like floor to ceiling full of photos. Plus, he's got a back room with like a little bathroom and stuff in it. More photos. I don't know if it was the first year. I think it was the second year. It gave me a Christmas present.
Nice.
Yeah. So I've got this. I got this big framed photo of Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra. Mm-hmm. Like, it's nothing amazing. Like, it's not like a big framed photo of John, you know? Like, it's not like he signed a big framed photo of himself, but it was cool. Like, it was like, here's this photo I have of Elvis, Frank Sinatra. And like, dude, he's like, do you like Elvis? I'm like, he's fine. And like, he's like, do you like Frank Sinatra? I'm like, yeah, he's cool. He's like, here, take it. This would be cool. So I got that hanging up at home. I'm really proud of it. I look at it and I'm like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So I don't really have bad things to say about John. Like I wouldn't anyway, because like he just passed. I'm not going to do that, especially not going to do that to his family, because his family doesn't deserve that. But my impression, I actually have pretty positive things to say about him. Yeah, he would show up at events that I would do, speaking engagements. He had shown up at the North Point Lighthouse. He had shown up at another one. And, you know, sometimes he would interject. I'd be saying things or I'd answer questions, and he'd kind of like step out and he'd be like, well,
that's not quite how it happened.
Yeah. But again, he wasn't like mad about it. He was just like, he was like, well, I was there. And so I was like, all right, okay. And that was, you know, it was kind of cool.
That's got to be kind of weird to be like, sitting here kind of like the expert on this thing, and there's a guy sitting in the room that I'm presenting to that was there. You know, like that right. would be kind of a nerve-wracking for me, I think.
Right. Yeah. No, and I mean, and the only reason that I'm the quote unquote expert is because I'm the one like
right
out giving the talks. He's the expert.
Yeah. Oh, know? Yeah, without a doubt.
You know, it's unfortunate that the autobiography that we worked on, like, as far as I know, and I should know because like worked on it, it never really went anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really unfortunate, because he's got a lot of stories that were not publicly known, and a lot of personal stories too. And he would have been great, you know, like if he was comfortable being public like that, he would have been great. He could have gone on speaking tours. I think he was conflicted, because on the one hand, you know, he was writing this autobiography, but on the other hand, you know, he still doesn't want that to be his life.
Mm-hmm.
He has spent the whole second half of his life trying not to be thought of as that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And to his friends and family, he's not that guy. To his friends and family, they know him, and they know that he's not the guy the newspaper says that he is. But you can't escape that.
Right.
And even when the Journal Sentinel wrote his obituary, which came out yesterday, to us, last week, to the listeners, even there, like, it was a challenging balance. I encourage people to read it, because they did a really, really good job of getting friends and family to make comments and show him as a person. And everybody has such nice things to say about him. But, you know, they can't avoid the fact that the reason that he's getting a write-up in the paper isn't because
he was a great guy.
Everybody that knows him thinks that he's great. The reason that he gets an article for his passing in the paper is because everybody remembers him as Frank's son who went to prison. And so it's like, even when he's passing and everybody they interviewed said nice things, half of the article is rehashing the things that he doesn't want to be known for.
Yeah.
So it's and that's, and I will say this, like the autobiography, he was very flexible on a lot of things. He was very, you know, with the editing and revising, he was very flexible. But the one thing he was firm about was the title. And he wanted the title to be called Life Sentence. And I don't know, I'm not sold on that title, but I completely get it. Because to him, his life was a life sentence.
Yeah. There was what he had done early on in life.
Yeah, he had served in prison, I believe, 5 years, something like that. He was sentenced to 8, but he got out early. So I think it ended up being like 5. But that's whatever. That's the one thing. That was in the 80s. The 90s, 2000s, 2010s. He's branded, you know. He can't go anywhere without people saying, oh, yeah, that's Frank's son. He lost his law license. He couldn't get his law license back. I think part of that is his own. He wasn't as accommodating to the state Supreme Court as he could have been. If he wanted to kiss butt a little bit, he could have got his law license back, but he refused to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they came down harder on him than they do most attorneys who lose their license
because
it got headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Attorneys lose their licenses all the time, and not all the time, but I mean it's not uncommon. And they have to appeal to get their license back, and most of them do. There's attorneys who do some horrible things, and they get their licenses back. He never got his license back. And I think a big part of that, and this was what he would say, was because any time that he came up for it, there would be a headline in the newspaper. And then the Supreme Court knows, oh, crap, however we decide on this,
it's going to make the news.
So do we want to be the Supreme Court that gives the mob boss's son his law license back? You know, that's what he would say. And I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Oh, I think there's absolute truth to that. So,
but
that is crazy.
But yeah, so we'll get into all that as a time, like right now in the timeline, we're in the 60s. John really doesn't show up till the 70s, but we'll get there. Yeah. I just wanted to kind of address the fact that he had passed for people who hadn't heard. And I'm not going to pretend like, you know, we were close and we were buddies and we hung out and we called each other on the weekends. No, like that's not the thing. I'm not.
You worked with him on this autobiography right. for an extended period of time. And then after that, the relationship just kind of disappeared.
Right. I mean, right. So like, don't misinterpret what I'm saying here. Like, I'm not trying to pretend that we were close because we weren't. But the time that I had worked with him was great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, He was pleasant. He was a joy to be around. He was humorous. He was very self-deprecating. Like he would be very humble in ways. He had like an eye condition where he couldn't read unless like he had certain lights on. And I don't remember what he called it, but like. A normal piece of paper, it wasn't that like his eyesight was bad, but he had some kind of thing with his eyes where unless the light was hitting in a certain way, he couldn't read.
But that's
so he had to have two lamps on at his desk at any given time to make the light hit it right. And, you know, and he was very humble about that. He's like, you know, absolutely great with numbers, good businessman, good attorney, can't read. But so like, He had challenges, you know, what today we would call learning disability. And it wasn't even a learning disability. It was like a physical thing. But he was very humble about that.
One of the interesting things that you kind of talked about with this is that while he spent all this time trying to escape what he was,
mm-hmm.
but he never really – you know, because he reached out to you when you started writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the viewing of that documentary you were in.
He did.
We did a Patreon episode on at one point in time. And I just find that interesting that if you were trying to escape that reality, wouldn't you just ignore it? The fact
I don't know.
Because if you think about it, there's just there's not a lot happening with the Milwaukee Mafia these days.
No.
You know, so it would be very easy to just shut yourself off and just not even realize anything is happening with it at this point. And he never did that. And I'd love to know why.
I couldn't say. I wouldn't know. Like, I agree with you in that, like, if it was me, I would not show up places. I would not reach out. That's how I would handle things. But, yeah. But I don't blame him either, because in some ways, this is his life. This is his legacy. And if there's people out there, myself or others, who are going to be covering it, he doesn't want that to out be there if it's going to be one-sided.
Or inaccurate.
Just
completely false, yeah. So, I mean, right. Yeah.
And listeners should not be surprised by this, but like, I'm actually very open to his point of view. Like, I don't agree with him 100%. Don't be mistaken. I think that he thinks he or thought he was more innocent than he was.
Mm-hmm.
However, I 100% agree with him that the FBI and other law enforcement groups just persecuted the hell out of him.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that completely. I think that they did things that, I don't know if they were illegal, but they were extremely shady.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if he's out there being like, you know, we got, phrase he would say is that the FBI would target people because their names ended in a vowel. That was a phrase he would say.
Okay.
Which is, you know, his way of saying Italian people.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not wrong. He's not wrong about that.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that on the show before, too. Like, if you hung around anybody of questionable background in the Italian community, there was a chance they were going to run a background on you.
Yeah, and like, we did podcasts.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, we did podcast episodes about people that were just followed around for months and months on end for no reason. I mean, and what did they find? Absolutely nothing.
Right.
So
he's completely right. Like I said, I don't think he is as innocent as he makes himself out to be. But that doesn't change the fact that even if he had never done a thing, if he had never jaywalked in his life, they still would have followed him.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
and I think
he's not wrong.
And I think that you bring up a good point with that. This is something that people like us have to think about is that I don't think we can truly understand the target that was on that man's back his entire life.
Yeah.
And it's not really because of any fault of his own.
No.
It's because of the family he was born into. Simply put, and yes, he was born into that family and he may not have done everything by the letter of the law and whatever, but I mean, I can't even imagine how hard the cops were on him. When we did the episode about the gambler,
yeah,
they just followed around for months and months.
Yeah.
That was just a gambler. This is Frank Balestrieri's son.
Well, yeah.
And it's like, I can't even imagine what was going on with him.
Yeah, I got a text yesterday. Yesterday I spent a lot of time getting texts from people. And I got a text from like one person. And they were like, can you imagine what his life would have been if he wasn't Frank's son? And, you know, and I thought that was a really great question because, again, John had a temper, but he was generally speaking a nice guy. Very smart, you know. Again, solid with numbers, good attorney.
Couldn't read.
But if he was raised with a similar background, but not that dad, he could have been one of the most celebrated attorneys in the state.
Mm-hmm.
because the only reason the stuff that he got, you know, in trouble for, the shady stuff, was because he was connected to his dad. That was the whole thing. If he was out there being an attorney for other businesses that weren't connected to his father, the shady stuff, he would have been an absolutely phenomenal, you know, business attorney. I mean, he was a phenomenal business attorney, but he would have been celebrated for it.
That way, yeah. He would have been viewed that way.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
So, yeah, it's so weird to have your entire – not that I know. I have no idea. But it's so weird to have your entire life defined, you know, by your parents.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I can't even wrap my head around how that would have been.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think – well – I mean, there's probably people that have a similar situation to what he had, but I can't imagine just how hard that would be to overcome, and it takes a lot of strength.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I can also see, like you talk about, it's a shame that that autobiography never got made.
Yeah.
But I can see the conflict with it because he kind of wants to put it out there because he wants a real story told.
Yeah.
But then in a certain way... Is he telling things that, I mean, is he more or less saying my father did these things and he doesn't really want to show that disrespect to his father? You know, it's kind of like a really, really weird line that he was probably walking.
Obviously, I can't speak to his, you know, internal thoughts. That I don't know. But
I mean, you can admit vision, like the turmoil that was probably there, you know? So.
Yeah, a very complicated man, for sure. But yeah, just wanted to acknowledge that that he passed, and kind of just briefly cover the interactions I had, and just to say that he was a good guy. If any of his friends or family hear this episode, I hope you take it the right way. Like, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, and I'm not trying to quote unquote cash in on his passing. I don't make a penny from this podcast, so I assure you that's not my motive. Just wanted to acknowledge it and say, you know, I guess he'll be missed. If nothing, I don't know what else to say. He'll be missed. I assumed I was going to meet up with him again a few more times, and I guess I won't. So,
and if there isn't family members or anybody out there that knew John and wants a public forum to just kind of let the mafia fan world know, you know, what was this man truly like, send him our way and we'll happily put together an episode.
Yeah.
It's just kind of other people, you know, sharing their experiences about John.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely it'd be good to get some positive stuff out there, because I'll tell you, just doing a Google search yesterday, you know, not that I was surprised, but there's so much just absolute bullshit.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah. Can I say bullshit on this podcast? I would say bullshit. Like, if you go on, like, Reddit, and, like, Reddit's got, like, the different forums, the stuff in there that, like, you'll find on, like, the current situation of the mob in Milwaukee. Oh, my gosh. Like, you know, they'd be like, well, I guess John's basically the head of the mafia now. And this, like, no. Like, you random person on Reddit, you can write whatever you want, but you have no idea. So, so getting positive stories out there is a good thing, because the internet is full of absolute crap of people believing what they want to believe, because it's far more interesting than the truth sometimes. But
and I guess we should make it clear that we're probably, if you send us a negative story about John, we're probably not going to share it.
I won't. If it factors into a story that we're going to cover down the line, maybe. But if it's just to blast him, no, absolutely not.
So I guess with that, you got anything else, or should we wrap this episode up?
I guess that's about it. I actually think I went longer than I intended, because I was just going to kind of just acknowledge it. But I really wanted people to know that, you know,
it happened.
And that it happened, and
he will
I don't
be
have
missed.
Anything bad to say about the guy.
Yeah. So, all right, with that, we'll wrap this episode up. As always, we do have an email. You can reach out to us at MilwaukeeMafia@gmail.com. I totally stole that from you, Gavin.
Sorry. Yeah, that's cool.
Sorry, wrong podcast.
No, that's all right.
And we will be back next week with a Patreon and 2 weeks with another Mafia episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Mafia podcast. Join us next time for another look back at Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.